You're listening to The Mark White Show.
That's a good how do you do.
The summer is heating up. Have your next backyard celebration with TNT Fireworks. TNTFireworks.com. Have safe family fun with TNT Fireworks.
Sometimes life brings you a moment you always will remember. Some of nature's most beautiful creations framed by places we know and cherish. And aren't we in luck that some of life's most memorable scenes are right here at home, all together at Alabama the Beautiful, the group on Facebook where the eye captures the moment, and it really does last forever.
Be sure to check out AlabamaTheBeautifulMagazine.com.
With six convenient locations to serve you, Bankston Motorhomes is your local RV dealer. They have some of the top brand name RVs for sale at incredible prices. Whether you are looking for an awesome RV for a long-term road trip or a smaller or more lightweight RV for the occasional weekend getaway, Bankston Motorhomes is here to provide you with some outstanding options and deals that you just won't find anywhere else. For more information, go to BankstonMotorhomes.com or visit one of their six convenient locations in Huntsville, Florence, Warrior, Albertville, and Ardmore in Nashville, Tennessee. That's Bankston Motorhomes.
North Alabama is full of adventure. If you love food, we've got it. If you love festivals, we've got them. If you love the outdoors, we've got plenty of places to explore. Whatever you love, we're sure to have something for you. For all things North Alabama, check out northalabama.org.
Now, with clear seed peaches, tomatoes, and other fresh produce, J. Calvert Farms in Coleman, Alabama is ready to serve you. Located at 30 County Road 260, Coleman, Alabama, you can go to their website at jcalvertfarms.com and follow them on Facebook and Instagram at jcalvertfarms. Give them a call at 256-636-2752. That's J. Calvert Farms in Coleman, Alabama.
Hey, everybody, this is Daryl Worley, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. Hey, step up and make a difference like he does.
This is Nico Johnson from Andalusia, Alabama. Assistant football coach at University of Texas. Be where your feet are. You listen to The Mark White Show.
Hey, y'all, this is Jeff Foxworthy, and you, yeah, you can make a huge difference in somebody's life. You just may not have figured out how yet, and that's why you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi, I'm Crystal Gale, and you're listening to The Mark White Show, and one smile can make a difference.
Hello, I'm Gene Stallings, and this is the Mark White Show. Get off the sideline and get involved and make a difference in your community.
You are listening to the Mark White Show. My daddy is your host, Mark White.
Welcome to another edition of the Mark White Show. I am your host, Mark White. We're coming to you from Coleman, Alabama at the Coleman Public Library. And at the beginning, I would like to say thank you to the Coleman Public Library for letting us use this room to be able to do this interview today. It's a very important subject that we're covering. It's something that I've covered plenty of times before here on the Mark White Show over the almost 5 years that I have been doing this, to recognize difference makers, to share stories, to encourage and inspire. And one of the subjects we have covered is addiction. We've covered depression. We've covered anxiety. We've covered all the different things that people would look at as maladies, as struggles that they have. And today I have Mr. Kyle Berman with me to share about his own personal experience and his finding opportunities and ways to recover, if you will, to be able to share his experience to try to help others on their journey and road to recovery themselves. Welcome to the Mark White Show, Kyle.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me on the show today. I really appreciate this opportunity to share a little bit of experience, strength, and hope with you and the listeners. So, I guess I can start a little bit from the beginning, like where it all started. I'm from West Palm Beach, Florida. My mom and dad, they never married. So I kind of struggled with a little bit of, these abandonment issues as a child. Dad was never around. My mom, she did the best she could with what she had, it was tough. I think my first run-in with the law, I was actually 9 years old, and it was good intentioned. It was Mother's Day, and me and my friends snuck out to steal our mom some Mother's Day gifts from the dollar store. So we went to the Publix Plaza, and we saw a ladder to the roof, and we climbed up on the roof, and somebody called the police, and this would turn out to be my first encounter with the law. So the police officers started coming up the ladder, and I had the great idea to run and jump off the front of the building, and I did, and broke both of my heels. Needless to say, for Mother's Day, her gift that she got was a police officer carrying me to the front door because I couldn't walk. And that kind of sets the tone for the rest of my life. I think a lot of the trouble and the things that I got into from an early age was because I wanted attention. I felt like I wanted to not be forgotten. I wanted to be seen. I wanted to be loved. And these are certain things that I felt like I didn't get. I believe, you know, hindsight is 20/20. And when I look back at it, the old idea that I was not good enough. I was not good enough and my family didn't want me. That's what I believed. And how that perception, you know, came to be, I'm not exactly sure, you know, the things that happened. But I do know that, like, to this day, that old idea is still somewhere in me, you know, and I've done a lot of work in kind of rooting that out. And, you know, addiction, you know, at the end of the day, it isn't even about the drugs. It's not about the alcohol. It's kind of a little bit about what you talked about, right? It's a spiritual malady. You know, I'm not okay with me. I'm not okay with the people around me. And I have no relationship with a higher power or God, if you will. What I did, you know, I think when I was 12 years old, I ended up in this middle school. And like all the other kids, I traded my PlayStation for two semi-automatic BB gun pistols. And for whatever reason, I took those to school with no intention of harming anyone. Like, at my nature, I'm a very good-intentioned and well-intentioned person, and I never mean anybody any harm. But I took them to school, and then I guess that's really frowned upon. And I got kicked out of there, and then I was shipped off to a military school. I'm 12 years old at this point, and I'm in military school, and this is just another one of those things that I'm like, well, this is just some more evidence of why my family doesn't want me. This is just kind of solidifying that belief that, I'm unwanted, I'm unlovable, and I'm not good enough, right? And so a lot of my life I'll spend, growing up trying to prove to the world and other people and to myself that I am good enough. And a lot of it was, it's all out of this delusion, right? And because to some degree I believed I wasn't good enough, right? And today that's not the case, but, you know, we'll get to that part. I think my first time I started, you know, smoking weed and drinking with my mom at around 13, 14, the first time I ever did cocaine, my mother introduced it to me and I was 16 years old. So this made me feel like that was okay, right? And so like, mom's doing it, I can do it, it's okay. We're just having fun. I just have to, you know, make sure I keep things in order, get my grades up and so on and do, you know, all the things that everybody says I should do, right? And so I tried to do that. It's a progressive illness. I didn't immediately become an addict at once, I feel like for me, I was born an addict because I was never okay with myself. And I always wanted to put something in my body that changed the way that I felt because I wasn't okay with me. Right. And that's part of this journey is learning how to love myself enough, that I never want to put anything in my body to get high again. Right. And that's part of this journey. Kind of fast forwarding a little bit, I left the military school and went to another, boarding school because, the military school was all boys and I wanted a co-ed school naturally. So I went to a co-ed international boarding school and, I did pretty well. The progression of the illness would continue. I experimented with different drugs and everything. But again, like I felt like it was okay because mom does it. I graduate high school. you know, and I figured, and I had the bright idea that I would just party and get that out of my system before I go to college. But the party didn't stop, right? And so, like, I, in my mind, I just wanted to get the partying out of my system so when I go to college, I can focus on schoolwork and stuff. But for, you know, all intents and purposes, that party did not stop. And then I ended up back at my mom's house, and at the age of 20, she introduced me to crack cocaine. And at that point, when I say introduced me, I walked out of the room, and she was sitting on the couch with this guy, and they were smoking crack. And I was like, well, I want to try that, you know, and that, so that's my part in this, right? And again, this is not a dig on my mother. She loves me. She cares about me. She's doing the best she can with what she had, right? She didn't see what was going to happen to me as a result of this. I never had a safe place to call home. So like my mom always kind of stayed around here and stayed around there when I was little, when I was younger. Yes. But, as I started to get a little bit older, like I've never had a consistent place that I could call home. So I'm this transient person who, doesn't have any relationships, meaningful relationships with friends, family, or anything. And, I'm not okay with me. Right. And this is kind of that spiritual malady again. Right. And so my spiritual condition, as I define it today, right, my spiritual condition is the quality of the nature of my relationship with myself, God, and other people. Right. And so what am I doing today to maintain these relationships? Well, I can tell you back then I didn't have any of that. There was no, I mean, it was just sickness. I was not well. My first time in a psych ward was in 2011. I was taking a lot of Vyvanse and drinking and stuff like that. And, you know, I went to a house party, a Halloween party, got really messed up and got on a motorcycle, crashed, don't remember any of it, ended up in the psych ward, you know, and they were like, you know, you were saying you didn't want to live anymore. And I was like, well, I don't remember saying that, but I do kind of feel that inside, you know, that that was, and, you know, again, this is a progressive thing. So that was the first trip to the psych ward. And then, as time kind of progresses on, you know, my crack addiction starts to kind of, you know, take precedence, but this was the thing. So I wasn't an addict. And this is really important because I think a lot of people that struggle with substance abuse, they compare themselves to other people. And that, as a result, separates us, right? When I'm comparing myself to other people, and I do it, and I still do it to this day, right? Comparison is the essence of my ego, and it's the thief of joy. If I'm looking at somebody, right, I can walk into a room full of people who love and care about me and feel completely alone. Why is that? It's because I'm comparing myself to them. I'm looking at myself as either less than or more than or both at the same time. And that separates me, right? It's a self-centered fear, right? And again, it's like, I'm not good enough, right? Again. And so, when I continued to kind of, you know, progress through this, this illness, of addiction, I got to a place where I ended up, well, yeah, I've got a crack problem, you know, but, it's just a problem. I just smoke crack, you know, a little too much, right? And then I was like, okay, well, I'm going to manage this. So I'm going to smoke crack for 3 days, and then I'll do Oxycontin for 3 days, and then I'll do, you know, marijuana for 3 days, and then I'll just drink for 3 days. And that was my system, right? It's the way I was convincing myself that I was not an addict. And it was by, like, well, I'm not dependent on any one thing. So, and this is me comparing myself to other people, right? And so that's how I was not an addict. So I ended up going to treatment because, you know, for then that was the first time I went to treatment. My great aunt Pearl was the one who helped make that happen. And I'll say I would not be here today if it wasn't for my great aunt Pearl. I wouldn't be here. So that was my first trip to treatment. I was still comparing myself to the people in there, right? The people in there were, you know, using needles, and they were heroin addicts, and they were this and they were that. And I'm like, well, I just have a crack problem, right? Which is like, you know, that's somewhat delusional. And that's, I can be a very delusional individual. And so, you know, I think about, you know, that time and treatment and the way that people talked about using the needle and all that. And it had my interest. I was certainly interested, but I said I would never do that. Never in a million years do I ever want to do that. But there was an appeal factor in there, right? Like there was a seed planted, but not a good seed. And the things I said I would never do, I did. I ended up with a needle in my arm, and then I was, you know, back staying with my mom. And, you know, I think it was a matter of time. Now there is something I will talk about, that a lot of people don't have experience with here. So, I'm from South Florida, right? And around 2013, between 2013, 2016, there was a substance that was on the streets down there, and it's called Flocka. At one point, all the crack dealers stopped selling crack, and they started selling Flocka, and all of them started doing Flocka. And as a crack addict and heroin addict, I started doing Flocka, and I was homeless on the street as a result of that. Flocka is a cathinone similar to bath salts. All those crazy videos that you saw in South Florida with people, like, you know, taking their clothes off and running into traffic, crazy things. I was doing that stuff, but I didn't take my clothes off. I did, however, run through traffic a few times. I did do a lot of running. It's interesting because, like, I don't get to share that with a lot of people because I don't know anybody else who was addicted to Flocka. It was an epidemic kind of isolated in South Florida. You know, that was...
I believe some people called it the zombie drug.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. You got it. They called it $5 insanity, the zombie drug. You know, it was, I cannot begin to articulate or describe what the feeling is like, because there is nothing like it. It was the most powerful drug I ever experienced in my life. I don't know if I would have ever gotten off the street if it was still down there. And this brings me kind of to a subject that's interesting. It's like, so Flocka, you know, just for point of information, is the only drug in the history of the United States that had a specific task force devoted to getting it off the street, because it was overwhelming police departments and hospitals, and it was posing a threat to the general public. This task force worked with the Chinese government, and the Chinese government banned the production of it, right? And so, like, the question begs, and because this was a threat maybe to China as well, this begs the question, well, why can't we get fentanyl? The banned production of fentanyl to that degree, right? So why can we not do that? You know, the leading cause of death in America right now for people ages 18 to 45 is overdose, primarily fentanyl. It's a hard subject for me because I lost my little sister in February. I've lost so many friends to this. I don't really know how to cope with it. The grief is just, like, you know, the psychologists and people, you know, in the medical profession kind of say that we almost handle this in the way that soldiers do in war. You know, it's like we compartmentalize it, otherwise we wouldn't be able to survive. You know, I feel like I'm on the firing line, you know, being in a recovery community and having a lot of people we're dying at... I know somebody every week that dies, you know, and so I'm a big advocate of Narcan and keeping that. I have some in my car. I have some with me at all times. You know, a couple weeks ago, I found my really good friend and coworker dead. You know, this is the grim reality. People aren't really talking about it because it still kind of carries that taboo, you know, topic. Like, nobody wants to talk about their kid being just like my mom. My mom wouldn't tell, my grandfather didn't know that I was homeless on the street for 2 years because she didn't want to talk about that with him. She didn't want to talk to her father about her son being homeless on the street because of how it made her look, right? And that's kind of the thing. And again, I love my mother, but, and she's doing the best she can with what she's got, right? And that says nothing against her, but that's the problem, right? It's like we are too afraid to be vulnerable and to talk and to tell the truth and, like, how we feel, You know, like when I ask somebody how they're doing, I want them to tell me how they're really doing. It's not like a casual, hey, how are you? You know, like talk to me, you know, I'm here, you know. But like kind of, you know, backing up a little bit, you know, my time on the street, that I lived on the street, I was arrested 9 times. I went to jail 9 times. 6 of those were for theft, a couple grand theft, some petty theft. One was, I think, panhandling and trespassing and, you know, all that stuff. 9 times I went to jail. I don't know how many times I went to the psych ward. I lived in a tent outside, it was traumatic, you know. I can't really articulate the way, like, what it was like.
One of the things I think about, Kyle, and I'll talk about it in the next segment as we roll over, there are people who lost you at 9 years old jumping off of the Publix building, because that's where they say, I've never done that. That's a starting point, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Folks, I hope you'll stick with us as we talk to Kyle Berman from the Coleman Public Library in Coleman, Alabama. You are listening to The Mark White Show, and I'm your host, Mark White.
We can make a difference. All we have to do is try. Every day's a chance to change somebody else's life. Let's all do something good today.
North Alabama is full of adventure. If you love food, we've got it. If you love festivals, we've got them. If you love the outdoors, we've got plenty of places to explore. Whatever you love, we're sure to have something for you. For all things North Alabama, check out northalabama.org.
Athens Bible School is accredited by Advance Ed, a member of the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Partnerships, and is a satellite campus of Calhoun Community College. For more information, call 256-232-3525. Or visit our website at athensbibleschool.org.
With 6 convenient locations to serve you, Bankston Motorhomes is your local RV dealer. They have some of the top brand name RVs for sale at incredible prices. Whether you are looking for an awesome RV for a long-term road trip or a smaller or more lightweight RV for the occasional weekend getaway, Bankston Motorhomes is here to provide you with some outstanding options and deals that you just won't find anywhere else. For more information, go to BankstonMotorhomes.com or visit one of their 6 convenient locations in Huntsville, Florence, Warrior, Albertville, and Ardmore in Nashville, Tennessee. That's Bankston Motorhomes.
For those of us who are directly responsible for the care of loved ones, we want to do the very best we can to take care of them. This is where estate planning is so important. With estate planning, you can still take care of your loved ones, even when you're gone. I encourage you to make a plan by going to BamaEstatePlanning.com. Harlan Mitchell has all the tools you need to make a solid plan for your family, just like I did. That's BamaEstatePlanning.com. Make a plan and do it today.
No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the legal services performed by other lawyers.
This is Jacob Johnson from Marble City Pharmacy, and we've got exciting news. An all-new Marble City Pharmacy and gift shop is coming soon. That's right, we're getting bigger and better. We will have more space and be adding a drive-thru, and we'll still be in the same great location we are today. While the construction is happening, we'll be moving a few doors down in the same shopping center, Ogletree Plaza. But don't worry, all of our fantastic services will still be available, including in-store pickup, curbside service, and free home delivery. We can't wait for you to see our new pharmacy and gift shop. Thank you for making Marble City Pharmacy Coosa Valley's best.
The summer is heating up.
Have your next backyard celebration with TNT Fireworks. TNTFireworks.com. Have safe family fun with TNT Fireworks.
This is Cora White inviting you to tune in every Saturday to Cora's Corner on The Mark White Show.
Welcome back to The Mark White Show. We are coming to you from the Coleman Public Library in Coleman, Alabama. We again thank those at the Public Library for letting us use this room to be able to talk today about this very important subject. As we talk about addiction, we talk about depression, we talk about underlying problems that lead to addiction. And one of the things that Kyle shared in the first segment was when he was 9 years old, it was Mother's Day. He was wanting to get his mom a Mother's Day present, so he decided to climb a ladder that he found and ultimately jumped off of the public's building. Now, one of the things I said in the last segment was that a lot of people listening, maybe you, stopped at that point and said, I've never jumped off a building like that and broken both of my heels. And maybe you went to that point with Kyle and, okay, I've done things like that at a very young age, and you went to the age of, say, 13 and 14, smoking marijuana or doing other drugs, and said, well, okay, I've gone that far, but I haven't gone to crack. I haven't gone to cocaine. I haven't gone to other drugs that have been mentioned. And you've decided this compare and contrast, which is something that is very familiar when it comes to people who want to feel better about themselves. So whatever your struggle is, we have to stop comparing and contrasting and saying, well, I'm better than Kyle or I'm better than Mark because I haven't struggled with that. And look at your own struggle, your own challenge as its own problem. Own it as yours and then defeat it. Because otherwise, you look at Kyle, you look at Mark, you look at other people, and, well, I'm okay because I'm not doing ABC. And that's not ever going to heal you. It's not ever going to change the path that you're on. It's going to get progressively worse because you just looked at Kyle and not yourself. So that's a very important point. And I'll say this too. When we go back to that very young age and we talk about childhood trauma, because this is a very important part of this conversation, because that is a starting point for many of us, is childhood trauma. What happened to you when you were younger? What happened that caused you to feel that sense of abandonment? What caused some of the issues early on as a child, an innocent child, a child who had no issues early on, but then those things were created by exterior things, internal issues that we may have had early on, and then developed into, I need to satisfy what's missing by doing something else. And then you choose things that are not healthy for you as opposed to things that are healthy. And if someone was beside us, Kyle, and said, Mark, Kyle, this is something that you can do that's going to fill, the void is still there. The emptiness is still there as a young person. It's what you fill it with. Some people have that person that says, here's something that you need to do that's going to help fill whatever you feel like's missing. And it's a good thing. And then we go through our life with this positive mindset, this aspect of we filled it with something good. And then there are times where there's nobody by our side, or maybe someone who cares about us deeply, loves us, and then shows us something that's negative. And that could come from a parent who's an addict, or somebody have an influence of a classmate or someone that they trust and someone that they've spoken with. And they, you know what, if Bobby's doing it, then I'm going to do it. If Bobby feels great, then I'm going to feel great too.
And you made some really good points about, you know, the comparison, right? And looking at how we're different. You know, I think that the real true healing starts when we start looking at how we're alike, right? Because, you know, we're all in this together, this game of life. You know, we're all going through it. We have our own journeys and our own paths, but we're all in this together. You know, it kind of makes me think about a certain principle or idea that I try to acquire more of, or quality that I try to possess more of, which is humility, right? And what I've come to understand humility as, it is, well, for one, it's the absence of my ego, right? It's the absence of comparison. It is a clear recognition of what and who I truly am, followed by a sincere desire to become who I could be, right? And so every day I have that choice, like, who do I want to be, right? What kind of person do I want to be today? You know, am I going to choose, you know, the comfortable, or am I going to choose the uncomfortable, right? It's like, am I going to choose what is comforting to me, what I want, my desires, whatever, or am I going to choose the character building? You know, am I going to choose to do the things that I don't necessarily want to do, but I know that I need to do, right? How do I, so, you know, I can say, like, kind of going back to that, you know, that belief, that old idea that I'm not good enough, right, has low self-esteem, right? Well, how do I get self-esteem? How do I get more self-esteem? Well, I have to do esteemable acts, right? Self-esteem doesn't just, you know, I don't just, oh yeah, I've got self-esteem. Just like, I can't just think my way into that. I have to take action on a regular basis. I talk about how I feel. I pray, I meditate, I see who I can help on a regular basis. And it's not limited to just addicts, alcoholics. Anywhere in all of my occupations and affairs, who can I help? And whatever. And sometimes it's the little things. It's like, hey, how are you doing today? The person who's standing off in the corner that nobody's talking to. Well, why? You know, I'm going to go say hi to that person. You know, that person that feels like that nobody sees them, that they're alone in this world and, you know, and they're afraid and whatever, right? I'm just going to go say, hey, what's up? How are you? You know, like it's these little things that can change. And it's like there's the ripple effect, right? It's like I do this for one person. Like there's an interesting thing going on in my apartment complex right now where, you know, we have like these community laundry machines, right? And one day somebody's, you know, towels and whatever and stuff were in the dryer and I needed to use the dryer. So I took their towels and stuff out of the dryer and I folded them and I folded all their kind of laundry and just set it on top. And then I put my laundry in. And then that person left a note and said, thank you so much. And they did the next nice thing for the next person. And so it's been going on for over a month now, you know, like I'll go down there and I'll see like little notes and people are like, you know, somebody recently put my laundry in the dryer, like paid $1.50 and put my clothes in the dryer.
Carry my laundry down there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. Like, and it's just like it's this contagious positive effect that we have, right? And so like, and I have to try to do that. Whatever it is, if I see the opportunity to be helpful, I take it, right? I try. I'm not perfect. Look, I'm human, right? I still suffer from the human condition, but I make an effort day by day to be a better person. Granted, I didn't get here by myself, right? This is not me saying I did all of this. I picked myself up from my bootstraps and whatever whatever that term is, right? And brought myself here. When I was living on the street, you know, this is one really good thing my mother did. In Florida, they have what's called a Marchman Act, and they basically, it's a civil court order. And I fought it and I tried to fight it, but it was a civil court order where, they order me to go to treatment for 2 months. And so I was going to go to, you know, I had the choice. I could go to the state funded treatment for 2 months, or if I don't comply with that order, I go to jail for 6 months. And that was pretty good. I'm not great at math, but I'll tell you one thing, 2 months sounds a lot better than 6 months, mm-hmm. You know? So, I went to treatment. That's where I found my first glimmer of hope. You know, I got a sponsor, you know, I worked the steps after leaving there and, you know, and I, you know, I've had a couple relapses and along the way and, you know, now, today, I've got a little over 4 years, you know, and I have so many things and so many blessings and they're not just like these material things. Like I'm looking to buy a house, you know, pretty soon. And that's insane, right? A person who was living in a tent behind Pep Boys, in South Florida, who was panhandling and homeless, and now I'm getting ready to buy a house. I recently got approved to get my real estate license, which was insane.
Nice.
Yeah, I was like, man, I had to give them like fingerprints, and they had to pull up my entire criminal record, and I had to explain it, right? And so one of those things, it says burglary of an occupied dwelling, and then, you know, but it was my grandfather's house that I had broke into, but it still shows like that arrest and these things, right? And so it's like, these people said that, because I had to appeal to the Alabama Real Estate Commission Board, and they said I am approved to get a license, so I just have to take the test and all that. But, you know, it's pretty amazing.
Very nice. And Kyle, you know this, life isn't going to get perfect for us to get better. If we're waiting for perfect things to start happening to get better, it's not going to happen, because we're going to have real hard stuff. While we're trying to get better, it doesn't stop. And whether that's the loss of a friend, loss of a relative, those hard things continue to happen, and we have to decide that we're going to stay on track, that we're going to stay on that path. And yes, we will have those relapses or those moments, but if we can always reset ourselves and get back on track, and over 4 years, that's amazing. And that was a big reason that I wanted your message to be heard. Not One More Alabama is one of the organizations that I have covered through the Mark White Show. and their efforts to try to help people who are living in addiction and to talk to people who are struggling, knowing that there are people listening right now who have that struggle. They struggle in silence. They're not telling people. They're not being vulnerable with other people. They are living that lie. They're living in deceit. And that's the hardest thing to think about, is a person who's in that very dark place and feels like they're not good enough. And that's exactly what we talked about before the show started, and we've touched on that a little bit, to not be good enough. What are we not good enough for? I told someone yesterday, I said, you're good enough for anybody, anywhere, right now. There's nothing that you have to do to prove yourself anymore to anybody. And this mentality we get from a very young age that we have to be a certain thing or a certain way to please the people around us, it is causing great harm to people across the board, because they continue to do that throughout their life, being people pleasers. That's a word, a term that we use, people pleaser. And it's dangerous. And if we don't have people we can confide in, we don't have that sponsor, we don't have that person that we can go to, be a contact, be someone that we can be truthful with, be honest and say, how am I doing today? Not good at all. And let me tell you what's happening and why.
Yes. I completely agree with you. You made some really good points. And, you know, the biggest thing is, like, you know, we're not alone. You're not alone. You know, and that people-pleasing aspect, right, that, you know, we're just trying. And that's the mask, right? Who is the person I want you to think I am, right? That I don't even think I am, right? Like, why would I even go through all this trouble to try to put on this show for somebody, for what, right? For prestige and whatever, like, 'cause I want people to like and accept me. Well, you know, the worst thing we can do is not be who we are. You know, I can't explain the degree of spiritual sickness, like, in that gut emptiness inside when we are being who we are not. And so, like, a big part of this process is me taking off all the masks, because I had a lot of masks, right? Taking off all the masks so I can just show up today and be who I am. And I'm not afraid to do that. You know, I speak openly all the time about my recovery, because I recover loudly so that my friends and family and other people don't have to die silently, you know? And I can't tell you how many times me speaking openly and being candid and vulnerable and honest and transparent with people has helped a lot of people, you know? And it's opened the doors for other people to find recovery. So that's why I do it. I don't really, my story isn't just for me. You know, I'm not going to keep that to myself. I don't care what society says and how taboo or whatever. Doesn't matter to me. The preservation of life and helping save lives, that's what matters to me. I'm tired of my friends dying. I'm tired of my family dying.
First step, someone right now laying in their bed, they haven't gotten up, but their life is in a death spiral. You were in the death spiral. You just didn't die. That's the only difference in you and all of your friends, is that you didn't die. You're still here. You are a survivor. And what you're doing is you're living as a survivor, telling others who are on the same death spiral, you can survive and you can live, and this is how. So what's the first step right now, Kyle? If somebody is out there, what is the first thing that you would tell someone to do to be accountable to themselves?
Ask for help. Ask for help. You know, and there's a lot of different resources out there, and I'm not trying to promote any specific place, but there is a lot. You know, you go on and you look up, like, addiction prevention, and you look up addiction resources. You can call the addiction resource hotline, right? There's a certain nonprofit institutions, Recovery Resource Center, ROS. You know, there's Not One More Alabama, right? There's all these things. You ask for help. You know, and the biggest thing is, like, because that's the hardest part, right? Like, there's, like, 12-step programs, right? And these 12-step programs, like, well, the hardest step for a lot of people is the door step, you know? And fortunately for me, I was court ordered. I had to go. I didn't have a choice. And I think, you know, because of how bad it was for me is why I was able to get recovery came a little bit easier, because I was hopeless. There was no way out. But this is where we have to look at things as not being like how you're different from me because, oh, you weren't as bad as me, so you don't need help. Well, how do you feel inside? You can't quantify trauma. You can't quantify feelings. You know, that emptiness and that soul sickness inside, that not wanting to live anymore, all that stuff, that you can't quantify that. Don't try to, you know, compare, like, you know, my life and, you know, some flock of fiend and heroin addict, crack smoking, you know, junkie, to that was, you know, whatever, to you and your potential problem with pills or whatever. And I'll say right now that there's people out there that aren't even addicts, that, you know, maybe just wanted to go get some Percocet or wanted to get some Xanax or something, and they're putting fentanyl in all of it, and people are dying that aren't even addicts. So make no mistake, the landscape today is very different. And for people who are sober and who are trying, you know, one more time, that might be the last time if they go back out. And that's what I'm experiencing a lot, is my friends are sober and they're in their rooms and they're doing good or whatever, and then they pick up one more time and that's it.
There's another set of steps, the steps of grief, stages of grief, people call it. And one of those steps is denial. And we're grieving for ourselves. We're hurting for ourselves. And you can look at grief as external. I'm grieving for someone or something that's lost, but we're grieving for ourselves. We're grieving for the child that became the adult that we are. We're hurting for what we became, what we could have been versus what we are. And that's done. That's over with. I've told people, time is not your friend. Time is not your enemy. Time, there's no care when it comes to time. Time is ours as a tool. It's a tool. And we use our time as a tool for good. We use our time as a tool for bad. We use our time as a tool for indifference. Whatever we choose to use time is our choice. And so we can live in denial for a long time. We can use time as our tool to live in denial. We can also use time as our tool to get better. And I don't know that I have tomorrow. I may have 8 good hours of just feeling my best. I've overcome this challenge, and then I'm gone, just like that. You could live 20 years and overcome and be, man, I had 2 decades of life. But you're going to close your eyes at some point. I'm going to close my eyes at some point. Just like my dad did in 2016 at 58 years old, and what motivated me to start this show, when he closed his eyes, it was over. No more denial, no more grief, no more addiction. It's done. Leading up to that point, asking for forgiveness, seeking forgiveness from all those around you because of what your actions led to, I thought, I don't want to ask for forgiveness from anybody. At the point that I'm done, I want it to be one that I've done what I could. I've helped people. I've tried to make a difference. I close my eyes and I'm okay. Because a lot of people, as a police officer, as a former police officer, I've seen life end in different ways. And I've seen some very awful ways that people have gone because they were not at peace. And I've seen people at peace too, Kyle. I've seen people close their eyes and be completely at peace. And that is one of the most beautiful experiences I've ever seen, is when someone's at peace and they move on. Because every one of us is going to die. Every one of us has that end. How is it going to end for you and me? That's the big question. And so far, you've been over 4 years clean. And you're on that path. And you're doing it for your sister, Brooklyn. You're doing it for Aunt Pearl, who stood up for you and said, I'm going to take this young man and get him on a different path. And one of the things I wanted to do today, Kyle, was dedicate this show to Brooklyn. I've seen the struggles that you've had because of that loss, but know that your voice today is being heard as a form of their legacy, and it's carrying a torch for them moving forward. So just understand that whatever pain, whatever hurt you're going through, this is for them. Someone listening right now needed to hear it.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate that. And yes, that's why I do this. That is why I do this. It's not about me, right? I have to take these tragedies and turn them into stories of hope. I have to take these liabilities and turn them into assets. I have to take these terrible negative things in life and turn them into, you know, something positive and good, you know. And that's, you know, that makes me think about this one prayer that I know pretty much by heart, most of it anyways. And it's the St. Francis prayer. I don't know. It's just one of those ones, because that's really like the idea behind it. Like, it embodies the person that I want to be, right? And it's, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there's hatred, I may bring love, that where there's wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there's discord, I may bring harmony, that where there's error, I may bring truth, that where there's doubt, I may bring faith, that where there's darkness, I may bring light. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved, for it is by self-forgetting that one finds, and it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life, right? And that, I remember that, right? I recite that because that embodies the person that I want to be, right? That is the degree of humility that I want to have. That is what that in my mind is what I believe is God's will, you know, and I believe in you know, these things and things happening for a reason. And I don't always get the privilege of knowing what that reason is. And I also have to keep in mind, like, again, it's not always about me, right? Because that's what a lot of people think very singularly, you know. It's just like, it's about me. Like, why did this happen to me? Well, it's not always about me. It's not always for me. The bad thing that might have happened to me might have not been for me. It might have been for somebody else. And I have to acknowledge that and accept that and know that. Right? Or I don't have to, right? Because, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, and this is the thing, it's like, what happened yesterday, that was God's will. What happened today, that's God's will. And what's going to happen tomorrow? Yeah, you're right. Yep, it's God's will. And I can either get on board with that, right, and accept these things that I can't change, or not, right? And when I don't accept these things that I can't change, that's when things get a little unmanageable for me, right? I change the things that I can, but then the rest of it, I have to leave that to God. And that's, you know, and that's a lot of what I have to do today on a day-to-day basis. Am I always good at it? No. Sometimes I'm like holding on to this thing and I'm like, I gotta do this way and, you know, I'll make this happen, right? And then I get to that point and I'm like, well, I just let go and then everything gets better again, right? And I stop fighting it. You know, there's certain promises and things, and it's one of those is like, we'll cease fighting anything or anyone, right? And that's how it is for me today. Placed in this position of neutrality, safe and protected.
Kyle Berman, it's been a real pleasure to have you here on the show today to share your experience. And I hope that someone listening right now will take that step to find someone they can talk to find that help. I want them to know that A, they aren't alone. B, they are loved. They're important to us. I said today that I would probably fight for someone else more than I would fight for myself. There have been those times in my life where I look at you and so I can fight for Kyle. I may not fight for Mark, but I can fight for Kyle. I can fight for somewhere else because there's no hope for me. There's hope for other people. We've got to find where that hope is for us.
Yes.
And again, I appreciate you being so open and willing to share your story. So thank you again, Kyle.
Thank you for having me, Mark. I really appreciate this.
Folks, here on the Mark White Show, we're recognizing difference makers like Kyle Berman, and I hope that you'll share this story with your family, your friends, your neighbors. This message is important. They need it. When I say please share, it's not for me. It's for other people who need to hear these messages, because there are people out there right now hurting various ways, different things that have affected them, and it may be drugs. They may need so desperately that life of sobriety, and we hope that for them. And at the same time, if we want help, we have to find help ourselves. We have to decide that we want the help that's out there and not say that, well, there's nobody there for me, nobody cares about me. They most certainly do. And if you didn't feel that from this conversation, then you probably need to listen to this again. I want you to follow The Mark White Show on Facebook and Instagram, and I want you to subscribe to The Mark White Show podcast wherever you get your podcast. You have been listening to another edition of The Mark White Show, coming to you from the Coleman Public Library, and this is Mark White. No. encouraging you to find your purpose by making a difference in someone's life today.
There are moments in life you wish you could capture forever. Alabama the Beautiful is a new online magazine that preserves images from sweet home Alabama. Yours anytime, online, every month. Where the eye captures the moment and it really does last forever.
Be sure to check out alabamathebeautifulmagazine.com.
Thompson Roofing and Construction is a locally owned family business serving the North Alabama and Southern Tennessee area. They are a Better Business Bureau A-plus member since 2011 and a GAF Master Elite Contractor. Give them a call at 256-952-3309 or check them out on the web at 256roofing.com. They offer free inspections.
Thompson Roofing and Construction.
Mr. Cecil Batchelor is the one that started this business as Dependable Service Center. And even though now it's Green's Dependable Hardware and we're a True Value store, our tagline is still your Dependable Service Center. We've tried to keep that alive for all these years. Mr. Batchelor really started a good business. We're really excited to be carrying on a long-standing tradition. It's the oldest retail store in the city of Russellville. We're Green's Dependable Hardware, 15220A Highway 43 in Russellville, Alabama. We're right behind McDonald's or right across the street from the hospital. Number is 256-331-0123.
Your Dependable Service Center.
Is it time for a haircut? Give my friend Philip Butler at Southwind Barbershop a call, located in Rogersville, Alabama. You can call him at 256-247-5658. Make an appointment or just walk in. That's Southwind Barbershop in Rogersville, Alabama.
And gentle people who shout a friendly hi when they go passing by, who live and love in my hometown. Ah, these are my kind of people.